You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, happy holidays and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here and we're going back to the movies once again. That's right, we are here and we are going to be talking about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And did Spider-Man make it into the animated world just as well as he did to the live action? It's going to be a pretty big question. And is Miles Morales strong enough to hold a film as the main character? I think we got a lot of questions and a lot of comments for tonight. Should be really interesting to do. But speaking of interesting, let me introduce you to the most interesting man on the planet as we speak. Let's welcome Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How's that for an introduction, sir?
That's, I can't possibly live up to that.
Oh, you are interesting.
Sure. It will, sure. We'll say interesting.
Right? Yeah, exactly. You know, so, but you know, do you drink Dos Equis? That's the question.
Not anymore.
Exactly. Not anymore.
Moved on to tequila.
Exactly. Hey, beer, tequila, you know, both make you end up on the floor eventually.
To be fair, he did say he doesn't often drink beer.
That's true. That is very true. But I have seen you with a beer or two in your time, so it's okay. and a tequila, more than once.
But 'tis the season for nog, sir.
That is true. That is true. And good season to you, my friend.
Yes.
So it's been a lot of fun seeing. We saw you quite a bit this weekend.
Yeah, yes, actually. This has been a fun weekend. And, you know, that's what the holidays are all about.
Mm-hmm. Spending with your favorite people and friends and exciting fun folk. So it's pretty darn awesome.
Or people you're just stuck with.
Which category do we fit into?
Well, you know. So well, moving on.
Well, anyway. Well, we got a great show, and we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. And, you know, definitely tell us what you thought of this movie. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. All right. We got a lot to talk about tonight, so let's get the ball rolling. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has actually finally announced their class of 2019. So we invited Michelle from the Iconic Rock blog to join us live and, you know, talk about who made it, who didn't, and were we surprised. Hey, Michelle.
Hey.
So I'll let you do the introductions of who made it and such, and then we'll go into thoughts on it.
Well, okay. Getting started in alphabetical order. This surprised people. The Cure.
First time out?
Not their first time nominated. I think it's their, oh goodness, third or maybe even fourth, but they are finally in. And not only does it honor a band that's been 40 years in the business.
That makes me feel old. Now, already, we're not even 5 minutes into this segment, and already I feel really old.
Really old. But this potentially opens the door for bands like The Smiths, one of the biggest snubs out there. Other bands from the 80s alternative new wave scene. This was a big, pleasant surprise.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So who else do we got?
Following them, we have the winner of the fan poll, Def Leppard. And originally, I wasn't really on board with this, but fellow bloggers have been pointing out it's a sort of a nod to the commercial end of things, but to accurately paint rock and roll in the 80s and early 90s, you have to include Def Leppard, and I think they will be a hell of a lot of fun at the induction ceremony. So I'm good with it. Hail Def Leppard.
They're going to
cool.
Yes.
Who else do we got?
Next up, finally, fourth year, third nomination, Miss Jackson, If You're Nasty, Janet Jackson.
Excellent.
Yes.
I was really surprised that it's taken this long, but I'm very happy to see that she found
it. Crazy that it's taken this long.
Yeah, she has been so influential on men and women currently recording and performing. Artists like Bruno Mars say that they owe her a lot. She has, she doesn't always get the credit that she deserves for being a groundbreaking artist, but it's finally being recognized. And if she performs in March at the Barclays Center, she's going to tear the roof off the place. So very exciting.
That's awesome. Who else you got?
We have another woman, the first female inductee into what we call the Clyde McFadder Club, i.e. Artists who have been inducted more than once. And that is Stevie Nicks. She was in 20 years ago, inducted 20 years ago with Fleetwood Mac, and she is now inducted as a solo artist.
Okay. I have thoughts on that, and we'll get into that. We'll get into it in a little bit.
Okay. Moving on, in their second nomination, Radiohead.
Okay. Another one I'll comment on in a few minutes.
Okay. Moving on from there, Roxy Music. One of the great pioneers of art rock. And this finally puts Brian Eno into the Hall of Fame. So very exciting there. This opens the door for artists like Duran Duran. And last but not least, you gotta smile, you gotta love it, the Zombies.
Well, it is the time of the season.
It is the time of the season. It is, this could be their year. It is their year.
That's awesome. It is an interesting eclectic class this year. So yes. It'll be very, very interesting to see what happens at the concert, to see who shows up even. Because I'm curious about that too.
I haven't heard anything about anyone saying they will not be there. I believe Stevie Nicks has indicated she will be. The Zombies definitely will be. Def Leppard definitely will be. Radiohead, not sure. That might be the Dire Straits.
I have money down that they will not show.
I doubt.
The one caveat is that it's in New York this year. So New York, you know, you play New York and that's going to be a bigger house. It's going to be a bigger deal than playing. Like if it's like last year was a Cleveland year, this year is New York. So I think you're going to get a lot more star studded appearances by guests, as well as you're going to see a little bit more, a few more people show up. I don't know Radiohead well enough to know what their thoughts might be. But, you know, if they can't play in New York, man.
They can't make it anywhere.
Exactly.
Not sure what Roxy Music is going to do either. Nobody's really aware of any, you know, bad blood and fights between anybody, but they just have not really communicated with each other.
Yeah, I don't even know.
For many, many years.
I have no idea, like, how long it's been since they've even seen one another, yeah. Let alone like, and this Roxy Music is probably the biggest surprise for me. Not that they don't warrant it, but I just never thought they'd be recognized on this level. Certainly in a year where The Cure is being inducted, it just seems like what, two English bands that are kind of from that same time period. That's crazy.
But it's two different sides of the same coin, my friend.
It is, but usually the rock and roll thing, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame usually thinks that that is one side of the coin. You know, it's like I haven't seen anything that like this before where they've kind of inducted two that are sort of similar, you know? Yeah.
If you will notice this class here,
very English.
5 out of 7 are British.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. I might as well just hold it in London.
The two females are the two holdouts, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you look at it that way. Yeah, I was actually surprised because I would have expected Todd Rundgren to make it.
Yeah, I kind of thought that I expected Todd more so than Roxy Music.
Also, John Prine, I thought, had a really good shot at it. But I know, what was it? Todd Rundgren was number 3 in the fan voting.
Yep, he is He's in the Nine Inch Nails Club, which is being the only artist to place in the top five and not get in. So we'll look for that next year.
I'm pretty sure, I think next year he will get in, not just because of his music, but also of his production work he did, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably get in as in a Cleveland year.
Yes. Fine. I like Cleveland years. I might be there in public hall.
I think it was, I'm not horrified about anybody who made it. You know, I wasn't a big proponent of Stevie Nicks getting in just because I'm not a big fan of her solo work as much as her Fleetwood Mac stuff. So I'm more of the type who would have thought, you know, there's so many other artists that are, you know, I was hoping MC5 would have gotten in finally.
I was hoping Kraftwerk would get in.
See, and I'm still hoping the Pat Benatar is going to get in.
Yeah.
Like to me,
he has to be nominated first, dude.
Yeah, I know. True. But I mean, for as far as women artists, I mean, you go back a little further and that's like, she should get in first, yeah. You know, like before some of these others. So
we definitely need to see Cindy, Melissa, Pat, Tina, Carole King, possibly as a multiple inductee. The thing about Stevie, though, is it's with her statistics and it's almost irrelevant. She is just such a powerful symbol to women in general, and I would include some men in that. See her as a symbol of a powerful woman in the business, and her just influence as, I mean, beyond her musical influence, just in terms of her image as an independent woman who made it in the business, we'll never mind the fact that she got into Fleetwood Mac because she was Lindsey Buckingham's girlfriend. That's just an inconvenient fact. But women really look up to her.
But then again, she was also Mick Fleetwood's girlfriend, and she was also John McPhee's girlfriend, and she was, oh, never mind.
There's a lot of cross-pollination in that band.
Oh, my God, no.
But I think you're right. I think, you know, I think Stevie Nicks' influence goes beyond just what she did. And she had a pretty strong solo career, too. So I think there's that element to it. I mean, I own a couple of her albums but I think moreover as an image, like, you know, when you think about personalities, music personalities, women music personalities from the 80s, 70s, 80s, even 90s. And, you know, she always gets buzz. Her fashion sense like was huge. And she almost, you could also, I think there's elements of I don't know if she, now see, I don't know exactly how much she really like adhered to or believed in like the sort of Wiccan stuff, but like a lot of that is associated with her. And, you know, so I think as an artist, I think she qualifies. You know, as we've seen, this is a lot, like there's a lot of this that is more than just, I mean, this isn't just about like you sell this many records and you're in, like there's so much more to it than that. And there are times when Stevie Nicks overshadowed Fleetwood Mac big time, even when she was part of that band. So I think that I don't have a problem with her getting in.
Yeah. There'll be no shortage of artists ready to induct her and pay tribute to her.
Oh, sure. And, you know, she got in, and so good on her. I'm not going to say anything else about that. but I, like I said earlier, Janet Jackson, I'm thrilled got in finally. Because compared to other artists, I think, you know, she's had more longevity, more staying power, and she also has a name, truthfully.
Yeah, and it's interesting that she, you know, despite all that backlash from that incident, however many, like, was it 2 decades ago now?
Oh, the Super Bowl stuff?
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, unfortunately, that really cost her a lot. She still manages to sell out arenas wherever she goes. She's still doing her thing, despite the fact that, you know, she hasn't been out and been promoted as highly as she once was. But yeah, she's responsible for a huge movement. And like Michelle said, I mean, when she performs, I would imagine, I don't think Rock and Roll Hall of Fame performances are known for their dance numbers, but probably we might get one like this year, like a really awesome one, you know?
Oh, very much so. And I'll be impressed to see who introduces her and, you know, how they do it. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Do they announce when they do this, like any of the, you know, sometimes they do like lifetime achievement stuff and items like that?
There will not be any musical excellence or early influence this year.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see. Last year they started a new thing where they're entering singles in. Yeah,
that will happen.
So we don't know what singles will get in this year, but yeah, as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, Michelle, but they've just announced the acts like that are going to get in. We don't know. Do we know which members of the bands and all that are in? Like, have they made it that clear?
They have taken to listing the designated members on the site. So for each artist bio, it will list.
And there's no drama with that yet so far? Because usually there's drama. Like, they leave somebody off or somebody, you know.
Surprisingly, that's been drama-free this year.
Because, yeah, I think, like, with a lot of these bands, there's not the drama that you see in a lot of like ones that get in, like, you know, for Journey or even, you know, Bon Jovi from last year, you know, there was like, oh, they're going to be reunited, you know? And I think the only band, actually the only artist that's not performing anymore is Roxy Music out of all these acts. All the others are still doing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very much so. And it's going to be interesting, you know, to hear all of them and seeing which members, because, you know, each band has had different members come and go, mm-hmm. you know, especially like Def Leppard or The Cure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm impressed. It's a weird range. I mean, obviously they could have gone a lot of different places. I know that some people were not happy that Todd didn't get in. I know some people were not happy that Devo didn't get in. You know, again, next year is a Cleveland year. Devo's from mm-hmm. Cleveland. Like, I think Devo's chances to get in are better next year because they do pay attention to that. You know, with the voting committee, you know, I mean, who knows what goes on behind those closed doors? I mean, we, for all intents and purposes, they could, you know, they could register all the votes and be like, you know what? That act really doesn't play well in New York or whatever. So we're going to opt to have another artist come in their place. So it's about the performance, just as much as it is about, you know, whether or not a band or an artist is worthy to get in.
Oh, sure.
It's cynical, but it's true. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of money in that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yeah, and HBO has, I'm sure, a list of demands. And it's to the nominating committee's credit that being, I'm sure, tasked with that, whether they admit it or not, trying to balance the popular demands of the museum and HBO and appeal to all the demographics, they crafted a ballot that, however you sliced it, you were going to get a good class. If Prine and Rundgren had gone in, it would have kind of signaled that the official voting body wasn't quite ready to go try anything new, but they've managed to create a class that is finally taking the hall in some new directions and is opening some doors for bands that we've been waiting to see for a long time.
Yeah, with the Cure and Roxy Music getting in particular, I think now I'm like. Whereas before I'm like, I don't think Devo's going to get in. Now I'm like, maybe they would.
Very much so. I think there's a lot of doors now opening for bands that we grew up with and were during our teen years and, you know, later. It's at that time now to see now which of the grunge bands will get in, which of the punk rock bands, which of, you know, the new wave bands, which of, you know, the CBGB era bands are going to be making it. So it's just going to be very interesting to see.
I fully expect to see Duran Duran on the ballot next year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I would be surprised if they're not.
Yeah. They, I mean, if you let Roxy Music in, the next step is to let Duran Duran in.
I would look for Duran. I would look for Rundgren. I would look for Devo, possibly Nine Inch Nails. I would look for the Doobie Brothers. Those are my early picks right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. I can name a dozen more off the top of my head, but no, I definitely think we have a very good chance to see some amazing stuff coming. So let's see. Thank you, Michelle, sure. Very, very much.
Always a pleasure.
When is the concert going to be? Have they announced it yet?
The induction ceremony is March 29th. Tickets go on sale in January, and the broadcast on HBO is usually, I think within a couple of weeks after that. So I would look for it by mid-April.
That's what I was thinking.
We do not intend to be there this year.
Oh. I mean,
it's all, like, who knows what could happen, but right now it is not our intention to
be
there.
Not looking to that. Looking ahead to 2020. Cleveland 2020, yeah.
Well, I got a headache. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
When you were before, couldn't look you in the eye.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
That is by far my favorite, because it's also character-driven and the stakes are high and there's much more of a mystery and intrigue to it.
A game like Wolfenstein, which people are saying are one of the most socially important video games of the past 10 years.
Catch our shows on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on over 30 more podcast outlets, including our friends right here at the ESO Network.
But I'm a creep.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now it is time for our Geeksy segment. And our victim, I mean, guest this week, is Dev Snipes. Welcome, sir.
Hello, my friend. And I am terrified right now. Absolutely terrified.
Yeah, just breathe. Just remember to breathe.
Breathe.
And it's great having you on the station. And I know we've seen you at various conventions. For those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes. So I am a professional actor. I am primarily stage, but I also do a lot of film work. I have worked in New York off Broadway. I've done a lot of independent films in New York. I am actually doing more TV now. I will be featured on the BET series American Soul that will start in February. And also I'll be featured on the NPR podcast Buried Truths in 2019. I think that episode will start, my series will start in February. So I've been acting for about 25 years and it's been a fun ride so far.
That's very cool. That's very cool.
Well, Mike, you have to realize Dav has gone so far off Broadway that he's now in Atlanta.
Yes. Yes. That's awesome. We've got a great gig for you. Where? Georgia.
You make a left at 43rd Street and just keep on going.
Just keep going, kid. Keep going.
Very exciting. How is the how would you say is the environment as an actor these days? Is it something that we always hear, you know, the classic stories of being a waiter and it's always difficult to get in and all that kind of stuff? How is the scene?
You know what? Today, acting is probably, we're more empowered than we've ever been. thanks to YouTube, thanks to social media. Like, we time actors have control to put themselves out in a way that they want to put themselves out. It's not only in the hands of a casting person behind the table with their own biases in regards to who you should be or how you should look. Now you get to kind of sell your story. Like, if you're not, I mean, I've got so many friends who are now writing their own things and then putting it up on YouTube and to get and getting subscribers and then using that to go do their own show somewhere, who's using social media to get words out on their independent plays or their independent movies. It's there's a new era of empowerment now for up and coming artists that is exhilarating. And it is so freeing, and I'm so excited about it. And I'm excited for what it's doing for the artistic community and the things that we now have exposure to, and just what that can lead to, and just kind of breaking the barrier for just seeing the same things over and over.
That's really encouraging to hear. That's that's really cool. I would imagine that, you know, that's true for a lot of the artistic endeavors. Certainly, we talk to a lot of writers and other producers of art here, and it's just nice to know that that's true for, I would imagine, yeah, with the certainly with YouTube being as big of a thing it is, and I just sounded really old there, I know, but yeah,
this, I mean, the YouTube, what is that?
Exactly. And look, I mean, I can remember back in the, you know, early 80s, getting my first Betamax VCR, and yes, it was quote unquote portable, which means that you still needed a wheelbarrow to carry it around. And it had a camera, and we made video movies and, you know, and stuff like that. We edited and edited in the camera and all that kind of stuff. And, but we still did it, you know, and now today, yeah, the quality that you can get for filming something right on your phone is, yes, just makes it so much more accessible.
Yes. I mean, you can put something full-fledged and high definition on your phone, cut it, edit it in a professional looking manner, and put it out to the world so that it can be seen instantly. And that's, like to your point, like, we've always had a situation where we can make films or do things in environments, but never, I think, to the skill or to the level or to the quality that we can now. Whereas you can put something together and have it look as I mean, my gosh, Steven Soderbergh's an Academy Award nominated director put a whole film on an iPhone. So you can do as much as that, and it gives you just the power to just to create, because at the end of the day, all we ever want to do as artists is to have the opportunity to create, whether that being cast in someone else's work or doing our own. And to now have this option where we can do so much in our own, I think is a great thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What was it about? I mean, when did you get the bug? When did you kind of know that that's how you wanted to tell stories?
It was really one of the most random things in the world, man. And I don't know if I necessarily believe in callings per se, but I had no experience in the arts at all. My family wasn't a family that went to the theater or anything like that. I had never gone to a play. The only thing I had was just, I watched movies on HBO when I was a kid. That was the thing that I had, is that I would just sit at home and watch HBO and watch TV all day. And I remember, but I had never thought about acting. I mean, that was never, because I had no connection to that being a real job that I could do. And I remember I was 16 and my sophomore year in high school. So I was a late bloomer by most measurements, because a lot of kids start out as this, as children. And we were reading a Shakespeare play. And I just remember I had this desire that I didn't want to read it, that I wanted to do it. And it just came out, it was just the thought. It's like, I really want to do this play. I really want to perform this play. And so I went up to my teacher, Miss Lamb, and said, Miss Lamb, how do I get to a play? Because I didn't even know what to do. I didn't even know what steps to take to get there. And how can I act? How can I be on stage? And she introduced me to my drama teacher. And from there, it was just, a series of unfortunate slash fortunate events that just led me down the different paths of like of doing community theater, majoring in theater in college, and then doing moving to New York, and then doing work in New York, and yeah, and just a lot of failures and trials and tribulations along the way, but also having successes, and then just going on the path from there. But it's all sparked from that 10th grade class when I was reading that play and just had the urge to just perform it, and that was, and I have, and I was what, about 15 or 16 then, and haven't turned back since.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. It's that's very cool. And and Mike, I think he's warmed up and ready.
Well, we just,
oh, that wasn't it. Oh no,
we were just sputtering him up.
Oh no.
Oh man, I was ready to say, well, thanks, guys. See you next time.
You know, just I try to get, you know, get you relaxed, and then yeah, then we
pull. All right. Okay.
Then we pull the straps on tight, tight.
Tight, tight, man.
That's how I like it. Let's go for it, sir.
He's enjoying this too much. We might have to get the ball gag out. I don't know.
Hey, man. I'm in theater. There's nothing you can bring out that would intimidate me.
Okay, bring out the gimp.
The gimp's asleep.
So wake him up. Thank you. We'll be playing all week. It's okay.
Hey. Next week, Reservoir Dogs.
Exactly. All right, Dev. You ready for your first question, sir?
Go for it, my friend.
Okay, Dev. What was your favorite geek out moment?
Woo! Woo! Oh, it's got to be... Oh, my God. It's got to be not being able to sleep for 2 days when The Force Awakens was about to be released. I literally could not sleep. I was so excited back in 2015 on that December day. I literally could not sleep because I was so excited to see this movie. And that was when I realized, oh my God, how big of a geek am I? that I'm so excited about this film that I have not worked on and don't know a single person in this cast, but it has shaped my life so much. I cannot wait to see it. To the point where I am having trouble sleeping before it comes out.
I think so, you and a whole generation was right there.
Yeah, so that was a special moment of just realizing, man, I am really in a particular club that movies and the art can affect me like this.
Most definitely. But here is the big question. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Oh my gosh. Okay. The cancellation of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. When really? Buffy the Vampire
Slayer. which time?
The Joss Whedon TV show, season 7 was the final episode, that my heart was literally broken because and the final episode of season 7, when they basically destroy Sunnydale, and I don't know if you remember the episode, but Sarah Michelle Gellar's Buffy is staring off into the sunlight, and there's this cracked smile on her face, like that she's actually done it. She's actually accomplished, saved the day. And the show goes, and I remember thinking, I will never see this character on television again. And I literally had a bout of depression because I am one of the biggest Buffy fans in the world, and that show was just something that I based my life around. And to lose something that was such a part of my standard of enjoyment, and to lose that and to not have any control to get that back, I was devastated. And I've tried to read the comics for season 8, and it's not the same. It's like I miss those characters, I miss those stories, I miss it being on the television screen. It's like that has now been, I think, about 16 years ago, 15, 16 years ago, and it's one of those things I still kind of come back to every now and then and just think, oh man, that is still there. So, yes.
That's always a good one, though. That is a very good one.
And thank you for bringing that back up to me, because I hadn't been thinking about it lately, but now I just did. So thank you, Mike.
No problem. That's why Buffy always streams, so you could always see it.
Whenever. It's not thus, but that's, oh. But I want some news. I want to see those characters continue. I don't want to see those stories end.
Blah, 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 blah.
You cannot blah, blah my pain.
Yes. Yes, I can. I've been doing this for 9 years. I've heard the pain. I've heard this horror, you know? What geeks you out the most?
A trailer for a new movie for a new geek film that I can't wait to see. Like, for instance, when we had that week where Captain Marvel's trailer and Avengers Infinity War trailer all came out within that week, what was that, about 2 weeks ago now? That just blew my mind, because that, the anticipation of a film that I can't wait to see, I get Christmas year round that way. You know, this is the Christmas season. This is a Christmas podcast, ladies and gentlemen. And that is my favorite time of the year. But I get that same anticipation, because that's the most fun part of Christmas, is that anticipation, the what's coming, what are you going to get up under the tree? I get that in these films that I can't wait for. And when I have these films that are coming out 3 months away, 5 months away, 6 months away, there's just a giddiness of knowing that I have something that is going to be this box under the tree. And I don't know how good it's going to be. I don't know how, or if it's going to be bad. But that anticipation of seeing something that I cannot wait for is such an enlivening feeling. And I love having it. And thanks to Marvel, and now thanks to Sony, and hopefully we'll see what happens with Aquaman, maybe even DC, I get to have that like five, six times a year. And that's incredibly motivating and like special, I think.
No, totally understand that completely, actually. But what turns your geek off?
When there is something like to that point, when there is that film that is anticipated and it comes out, and there is that split in the geek community about do we like it or do we dislike it, and it quickly devolves into this hate-filled like rage amongst each other. That's kind of when geekdom becomes unfun. You know, of course, you know, dare I bring up The Last Jedi again? But something like that, where it just splits the community and how you fall on which side. And because these things are so personal to us, because they impact us so much, when something like that happens and someone says, oh, I loved it, but someone didn't, or someone says, I hated it, and another person did, we take those things personally, because it affects us so emotionally. It's like you're saying something against my mother. And so I just can't, and then it becomes this personal thing. And you know, it's one of those things that makes you question, well, wait a minute, am I too invested in this? If it's going to get to this level, and of course, you know, getting to that level is where the passion comes from. It's why you love it, because it can get to that level, because there's very few things in life that give us that much passion and give us that much energy. So yeah, you're going to stay with it. But those are the moments when it kind of drops your geekdom and it pulls you out for a second.
No, totally understand that one.
Case in point, I mean, you just mentioned Last Jedi, and we just lost half our listeners.
I know, 100%. I know, guys. I apologize. We loved it, and for those who didn't like it, we hated it. So maybe we can get them both back.
Too late. They're gone.
They're gone. And we have such a good movie review. We have a good movie review right up. God, yeah, that movie. Hey, and I know. You know, we would have lost everybody if you would have mentioned Jar Jar. Oops.
Weezer. You know what? Someone brings up Jar Jar, I just want to shout out to Ahmad Best, the guy who played Jar Jar, because he didn't ask for that.
No.
Wherever you are, Ahmed, we love you. As an actor, I understand.
Now, he's far, far off Broadway, you know, as a What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Santa. Ooh. I would love to meet Santa Claus. How can you not want to meet someone whose mission in life is to bring joy? I eat, I make toys, I hang out in the snow, I have a smile on my face, and I bring joy to human beings around the world. Mm-hmm. How can you not want to meet that person just to get an ounce of that energy off that person?
Hell, he doesn't even have to worry about cholesterol or lactose intolerance.
Never. He can eat at everyone's house. There's 7 billion people in the world. That's 7 billion meals in one night. That's a lot of cookies and milk, guys. And he can just have it, and it's all good.
I'm sorry, Dad. I think you misunderstood the question. We want fictional character, not real life.
So. Well, Mike, I hate to tell you this.
No,
don't go there. I've hidden it for 9 years from him. No, do not.
Boys and girls, there comes a time when we have to learn the truth.
Mike Gordon isn't real.
Now we just lost our other half of the list.
Jeez. You didn't realize that was my secret goal.
We didn't have a lot of listeners to begin with. Come on. Oh, Jesus. Oh, no.
But trust me, there is a contingency out there that will just love to hear the story of hanging with Santa. And maybe those are the same people that watch the Hallmark Christmas movies. Maybe that's our new target audience. Maybe that's our target demo.
Has anyone watched that new Santa Claus movie that they did on Netflix with Kurt Russell?
The Kurt Russell one? Yeah. No, but yes. Mm-hmm. Everyone says it's good.
Yeah.
So. But when I look at the trailers, I just go, really? I mean, it doesn't look bad. It just looks like every other Christmas movie I've ever seen on Lifetime on the Hallmark Channel. So, but I'll probably watch it.
I've heard if you make it through the first 15 minutes, the rest of it's awesome.
Well, no matter what, it can't be better than Jingle All the Way, the greatest Christmas movie ever.
So, anyway, your next question.
Man, I didn't know we had any more listeners left to lose, but there we go.
Wow. All right.
Shout out to you, Sinbad, wherever you are.
What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Oh, it's on the nose. But it's gotta be the Joker. Who wants to, I mean, I don't know what he's capable of from one minute to the next.
Number one answer on the show.
Of course. It's I wish I could have taken a second to think more, but I'm like, no, that's just my gut tells me that. It's just that would be the most terrifying scenario ever. Because you never know what he's capable of from one second to the next, and there is nothing scarier than that.
Mm-hmm. That is true. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Oh, let's go with geek quote. Okay. Oh my gosh. Oh, the brain is freezing. Okay, I'm going to get this. Okay. All right. Okay, I'm going to go with the Karate Kid for Greek geek quote. All right, I'm going to go with, let me see if I can get this quote right. It's a Miyagi quote. It's if anybody can help me out, it's walking on the road. You can't walk too far on the left, you can't get too far on the right because you get squashed by grape. Does anybody remember that quote for me? Oh, God. No, because I'm on my own because this is the geek seat. Okay. Okay. If I can't remember it, then I can't use it. Okay, so I'm going to have to go with my favorite pose. I failed you, Miyagi. I apologize. Then my favorite pose is gosh, it's going to have to be the hands on the hips, Superman. Gosh.
The superhero pose.
Gosh. I failed.
Yeah, you saved it. You saved yourself.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you know. Oh, my gosh. You guys are good. You guys are good, man, because I was not ready for that. Ooh, you guys are good. And that's such a that's a Joker-esque question. I want you to know that, because I'm going to think of 10 answers as soon as we end this.
Yes, and you'll be put into Arkham because you'll be going, yes, it's the answers.
Oh, God, that was so evil. Wow, that was evil.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
Can I get paid $150,000 a year to watch movie trailers and just grade them? Grade them on their quality. That's my job. I get paid. It's a starting salary of $150. I get to sit in the theater. The trailer comes on, graded on a scale of A to D. What is the quality of that trailer? Because I absolutely love movie trailers, and to have a job like that, that would just be heaven.
That would be awesome. That truly, truly would
Let me just do that. Let me sit in the theater with that AMC Dolby Cinema surround sound, and let me just watch some trailers and just with my little clipboard and just grade them.
Yep, I agree with that. What geek occupation would you not like to do? And by the way, I would have to fight you for that other position. So.
You know what? I don't want to be the personal assistant to any superstar on any of these superhero films. I don't want to have to go run and get coffee for... I love him, but I don't want to have to go get coffee for Robert Downey Jr. or back in the day, wipe the sweat off of Henry Cavill's back while he's doing his workouts for Man of Steel, or go get Ben Affleck a drink from the local bar while he's going through Justice League because he probably was throwing him back really hard during that shoot. So I don't want to do that.
No, but if Gal Gadot was asking you to wipe the brow.
Okay, but we're in scary times now, so I don't want to do something that could get me in a bad position because I probably couldn't control myself in that situation. Like, oh my God, what do I do? So I hear you, but I just want to be away from them. It's high pressure.
Hmm. Okay, I could see that. Okay, Daph, are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
By all means, my friend. By all means.
Here it comes. Okay. What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Okay. Kevin Feige calls me. Caviar, we saw your audition tape. We want to sign you to a 10-picture deal. You'll play the character of Mark. You'll be in every Marvel film over the next 10 films. You will be an integral character to Phase 4. And at the end of the 10 films, you'll have a celebrated death. And you will be in the Marvel lore as one of the great characters on screen. And I would say, thank you. Thank you, Kevin. I will take that role. I will take it.
That's awesome.
And you'll slowly wipe tears from your eyes.
I'll take it, Kevin. I'll take it, Kevin. I don't even need 24 hours. I'll take it.
I don't even need an agent.
No. Just you and I will work the deal out. I trust you.
Oh, you fool. Oh, you fool.
In Kevin's hands, I trust.
Wow. Whoa, I don't know where to go with that after that.
Hey man, some things you'll weigh your options for a particular job and just go, well, but the bright side is, it's just...
Okay, folks.
Yes. So, on thank that you, boys note, and girls.
Well, Dav, I've got really good news for you. You have made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $16.08.
Yes.
Oh. That you have to pay us.
Oh, wait a minute. Can I do a money order?
Well, you have to remember he can't move his hands right now, Mike.
That's true. We'll have to wait till he gets the blood circulating again, if that happens. Yeah. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
Yes. Yes. But yes. But I can write it with my teeth. So just whatever works for you.
No, you have to remember after the segment the ball gag comes out. So
oh. Just as long as it doesn't go back in anywhere else, we're okay.
You didn't put that caveat into your contract, sir. You remember Kevin Feige told us.
Kevin, I trust him.
Oh, before this goes too far down the hill, thank you so, so much. You're going to actually hang out with us, and you're going to be talking tonight all about the Spider-Man movie.
That sounds fantastic. I cannot wait. It's a great film. I look forward to talking about it.
So let's take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
My name is Peter Parker. I'm pretty sure you know the rest. I saved the city, fell in love, then I saved the city again and again and again. Look, I'm a comic book, a serial, I did a Christmas album, and a so-so popsicle. But this isn't about me. Not anymore.
Spider-Man swings in once a day, zip-zaps up in his little mask and answers to no one. I love you, Miles.
Yeah, I know, Dad.
You gotta say I love you back.
Dad, are you serious?
I want to hear it.
Look at this place.
Dad, I love you.
Dad, I love you.
That's a copy.
Ladies and gentlemen.
My name is Miles Morales. Brooklyn! I'm the one and only Spider-Man. At least that's what I thought.
You ever hear of the Super Collider?
You're gonna love this.
Dimension opening now.
You're like me.
That's impossible.
All right, kid, listen up.
This fry is your universe. Soggy,
it's weird, it's gross.
And this delicious normal fry is my universe.
So you want to learn to be Spider-Man?
Can you teach me?
Yes, I can. Time to swing. Ah, good, you're doing it. Double tap to release and whip it out again.
Okay.
Whip.
And release.
You're a natural. Whip.
Hey, guys.
Who are you?
I'm Gwen Stacy. I'm from another dimension.
How many more spider people are there?
Hey, fellas.
Hello.
This could literally not get any weirder.
It can get weirder.
Okay. We need to get back to our universes soon.
Brooklyn is going to collapse. My family lives in Brooklyn.
Whoa. Miles, what's wrong?
This was never your city. It's mine.
If I don't destroy the collider, none of us will have a home to go home to.
Remember, what makes you different?
Let's go!
Is what makes you Spider-Man.
Officer, I love you.
Wait, what?
That way. Other way.
Do animals talk in this dimension? Because I don't want to freak them out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it is time for our movie topics segment. We are talking about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And Mikey's going to talk all about it tonight.
We are going to talk all about it. All of us are going to talk about it. You, of course, me, and Dav's still in the chair. So he's still in the geek seat strapped down. So
yes.
He's not going anywhere. And, of course, we can't do this without one of our movie crew. Ashley Pauls is back.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Yes, Ashley. It's weird. Going to be weird talking to you with other people now. Because we did our series of just one-on-ones there.
Yeah. So I enjoyed doing those a lot. But
yeah, those were a lot of fun.
Exciting to get into holiday movie season here. So it's finally time to go back to the theater.
We are deep in it now.
Like,
the holidays are here and there's already a lot of movies to see. And Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is one of those movies that sort of, for my money, came out of nowhere. I remember seeing an ad for it, I don't know, maybe earlier this year? I don't think it quite a year ago.
Over the summer, there was starting to be like little ads popping up.
And I thought, go ahead, sir.
No. All I thought at first was it was going to be a direct to home video.
Mm.
And it was like, oh, they're doing Miles Morales as a home straight to video. And then I saw in theaters December. It's like, what?
Yeah, it's kind of like this is, it seems like Sony's tripped over themselves trying to do the Spider-Man stuff right. And we get two movies this year from them. One, Venom, which none of us saw. No, just kidding. an animated Spider-Man movie with Miles Morales in the lead role. And very, very interesting idea. I'm kind of curious as to just go around real quick what your expectations, what your thoughts were about, or if you had any sort of previous knowledge of Miles or the Spider-Verse or anything like that. And yes, Ashley, I'm looking at you. Like, did you?
Yeah.
what was your mindset going into this?
So I actually didn't quite know what to think. I saw a preview for it and I thought, that could be kind of interesting. I don't go to animated movies as often as live action, but I was particularly interested in Miles Morales. I've not really read any of the comics featuring him, but I heard about the character, loved the comic, loved the idea of that. And I actually read a young adult novel about Miles Morales and really loved it. So I have been wanting... Oh gosh, I was afraid you would ask that. I can't remember what the title of it was, but I remember liking it. So
that's pretty cool. I didn't know that they had those. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really interesting and I really liked the character and was thinking, man, I would love to see this on the big screen. I was hoping that eventually the MCU would get to a live action Miles Morales, and then I saw the animation style in the trailers. I thought this looks really intriguing. This looks something different than I had ever seen before. So it kind of went from a movie that I was like, maybe I'll go see that in theaters too. I kind of have to go see this in theaters. And it was actually my most anticipated movie in December.
Oh, wow. Okay. So expectations high then.
Yes, actually we're pretty high going into it as the year went on.
Gotcha. Dad, what about you? Did you you're probably familiar with the characters and the universe as well, correct?
Of course, 100%, yes. Very much so.
Because Miles has been around for almost a decade, right? That's fair to say?
Yes, it's been a while now. And he's particularly been catching a lot of heat and really becoming a fan favorite, I would say, like in the past, three to 5 years maybe, especially?
Mm-hmm.
Which has been very interesting because that was the thing that that was the most intriguing to me, because Sony has been very spotty in kind of what their recent history has been. I know a lot of people loved Venom. I wasn't quite on the Venom train, but despite that, you know, they do have a history, especially with those first two Spider-Man films, of really kind of setting the bar for what they can do with this universe and what they can do with this character. So to take Miles Morales, who is a character that is who has been becoming increasing in popularity over the recent years, and to really explore his story, I was incredibly intrigued by that, even though I had no idea what the quality of the movie was going to be. To finally see this character get a starring moment, I thought was incredibly exciting, because I think that's where we are in the comic book world, is that we're really ready for these other versions of these characters and to really start getting their due, as opposed to just the characters we've seen over and over and over again. So to tackle on this new portion, this new universe, was going to be very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And had you read any of the Spider-Verse stuff?
I had not read them. It was one of those things where I knew a lot of the basic gist of them just from just conversations. And even if I don't read all the comics just due to time, I kind of keep up with general storylines and concepts of who the character is and what the character's trials are. So I hadn't actually read them to kind of see like how the character is fully broken down in their comics. But I had an idea of kind of like what the flair of Miles and what the style of Miles was.
And to that point, too, I think as hot as Miles has been over the last, you know, 5 years, as I mentioned, another character in this that appears in this that's also been just on fire comics wise is Spider-Woman, a.k.a. Spider-Gwen.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, if you look at, you know, as far as cosplay goes, I would argue that Spider-Gwen probably was the biggest cosplayed character that didn't appear, that only appeared in comics.
That is, yes, 100%.
Yeah, so you get a like sort of a motion picture debut of two of these characters right off the bat, which is amazing. Now, Mike, I know you're familiar with Miles and whatnot, so what were your expectations going into this?
Well, I was really torn in a lot of ways because I loved Miles Morales. I have been reading, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man since they started it. And then when they killed off Peter in the Ultimate Universe and brought in Miles, I was like, oh, who's this kid? You know, that they're redoing Spider-Man from scratch and an original character. And it was just fascinating to me. They, you know, went back and they did it really, really well. And it was really interesting when I heard that they were going to be finally bringing him to the big screen. And I was like, please let them do it right. Please let them do it right. And they did it perfectly. They couldn't have captured it better. Right from even before any of the Spider-Man stuff at all, just capturing his life, his, you know, you felt like it was New York. You had the feeling of it, the whole family life between his mom and dad and his uncle. And, you know, it was just, it was great. I really liked it. And the voice acting was perfect. And I loved the scenery. It was, it almost felt like something I had never seen before up on the big screen. It almost felt like this was a whole new style of art and, you know, new animation. It's still CGI'd, but it looked awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I went in with pretty good expectations, not terribly high, but also not thinking that it was going to be a disaster. I was just curious because not only the characters that were involved, but you know, if you're in the title, the Spider-Verse, right? Now, the Spider-Verse has really kind of only been around for, technically, for a few years. But obviously, there's been different versions of Spider-Man throughout his history. And, you know, if you're trying to introduce a concept of parallel Earths and multiple versions of characters and whatnot, that can be really crazy. And that might be something that is hard for the average, you know, viewer to really get into. So I was really curious as to how they were going to do it here. And I got to say, it was pretty amazing. I the Spider-Verse comic is so huge in the cast of Spider, quote unquote, men, the Spider characters that appear in the actual arc. And this does not, even though it's called the Spider-Verse or whatever, if you were to get the trade collection or whatever of the miniseries that Dan Slott wrote, you would find that it's not similar in plot at all to this movie. So, and that's fine. Then there's a lot more characters, a lot more different versions of Spider-Man in that as well. And some of them I kind of miss not being in this. But I kind of hope that, you know, obviously with the popularity, we'll get more of this. So we'll see different versions of Peter and Spider-Man through like other places, which would be kind of cool, too. I think this story works particularly well with Spider-Man. I think that if you were to do this with Batman, Captain America, Iron Man, Superman, Wonder Woman, like, it wouldn't work quite as well. But there's something about Spider-Man that this kind of storytelling and this kind of level of, you know, this the message, which is anybody can be Spider-Man, works really, really, really well. Do you guys agree with that, or?
Oh, I think 100%. I think that has always been the number one appeal of Spider-Man is his accessibility. And just being the neighborhood kid, having the classic struggle of, do I go finish my homework assignment or do I go stop Doc Ock who's savaging Midtown? And it's always that, you know, do I go take Mary Jane on a date or do I go stop Norman Osborn who's releasing some kind of chemical? And it was always that classic conflict of this person just being a kid who's just trying to do the right thing, that he's not rich. He's not the billionaire playboy. He's a kid who could have used his powers to handle all of his issues, but instead he uses them to save people thanklessly. And I think that accessibility of just the average man doing what he can for the betterment of society is what made him so impressionable and so beloved. So yes, I think that part of his aspect is what really draws people into his story.
And I agree 100% with all of that. And I think added to that, the fact that Spider-Man is the perfect mix. I've always felt this way. This is one of why he's one of my favorite characters, is he's the perfect myth of heartbreaking, intense tragedy and lighthearted, I mean, bust a gut humor. You've got it, like, for storylines like this to work, you've got to be able to be a little tongue in cheek and not go way overboard like Deadpool does, but you've got to be able to, like, still have those, that emotional connection, that I think when Spider-Man's done really well, which this is, he's like, there's nobody better. There's just no hero better, because you laugh and you cry.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. I think they walk that line perfectly. Like, there's really funny lines where everybody in the theater is laughing, and then a couple of minutes later, you can be quiet because it's such a sad, like, kind of gut wrenching scene when, like, his uncle dies or he worries about his father rejecting him. So I think they did a great job balancing that without making the funny stuff too silly, so the movie feels like it has no emotional weight, but also allowing enough stuff for that fun. So I thought they did a great job balancing that.
Yeah, it's interesting that he loses an uncle, like, just like Peter, right? Mm.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I can't believe I didn't even think of that parallel. So
not just like Peter did, but, you know, that there's that tie there, right?
Yeah.
That's that thing that always has to be there, right? There's always got to be that connective element of loss or the prospect of loss to motivate the hero. So it's one of those things that was, unfortunately, I almost saw coming in the beginning, just because of how they set up Uncle Aaron as being Peter's heart and being Peter's guidance. I mean, you instantly kind of, those of us who know comics and know films, you instantly see the writing on the wall of, oh, well, Uncle Aaron's not going to make it. Uh-oh.
Well, and furthermore, like, when Uncle Aaron's like, I got to do some stuff. I can't, I've got some place to be. I can't. And I'm like, yeah, he's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you knew that, you know, if for those who read the comics, they knew that. But it's interesting how they also tied it in that he was the Prowler.
Yeah.
They also, if you watch Spider-Man Homecoming, Uncle Aaron was also in that movie too.
Yeah, they were kind of playing around with it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it was kind of interesting that they tied that in, but you knew what was coming. And I thought the Prowler was awesome. I thought he was a great, great character, because sometimes he's a good guy, sometimes he's a bad guy. Depends on the story.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the Prowler in the Ultimate Universe, so I don't know how much they pulled from that. But I got to say, I mean, some of Spider-Man's villains, like the Prowler, can be kind of like, oh, they're second string or they're not that impressive when you put up them up against some of the big guys. Because Spider-Man's got tons. I mean, he's got probably the best, if not the second best, rogues gallery of any hero, right? Mm-hmm. Him, like Spider-Man and Batman have the two best like gallery of villains ever. And some of them are great. Some of them not so much. Prowler, you know, he has moments, but in this, I thought, man, he really like visually looked threatening and much more threatening than I ever found him in the comics. And just really very cool on screen. I was kind of hoping that I'm like, oh, is he going to turn into like, I was kind of surprised when he died. Cause I kind of saw it coming, but I didn't expect it because I in the comics, he's still very much alive.
Yeah, 100%. And they do so much with just like the sound effects and the colors that they use for the Prowler. So like every time when he makes an entrance, it's this very like, it's this stark contrast to kind of like the sound that'll be in the room before he enters. And it's just like it announces him whenever he comes in. And for someone like the Miles Morales character, who is still just at the beginnings of figuring out what he can do, to have someone as intense and as intimidating as the Prowler be one of the main villains, it truly puts him in a sense of danger. Which is very hard to do in an animated film to truly feel a sense of threat, because you know you are looking at like just a CGI creation. So whenever you can do that and create real emotion, that's always incredibly powerful and speaks to how well crafted the animated film is.
Yeah,
great job on them for doing that.
Absolutely. I got a animated Spawn vibe from him like right away. Mm. I was like, ooh, man, that's just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So let's talk about some of the things we loved about this movie. Ashley, let's start with you. Is there something that really stood out for you as a highlight for this?
Oh gosh. It's hard to like narrow it down to a couple items. I feel like I could just go for like half an hour and talk about everything I loved, but probably the thing that stood out to me most was,
we got the time, animation. Ashley. Go ahead.
No, so all right. Here we go.
We'll just sit back. You got it. You got it from here.
The thing that caught my attention most was the animation, because someone mentioned it before, I think. It felt like something I had not really ever seen before. It felt really fresh, and like the colors were super vibrant and stylized, but like it never got annoying. Like just somehow it worked in the context of this movie. And I love the little touches that made you feel like you're reading a comic book, like when they did the panels or the little word bubbles popped up, or like little pows or bams when they're fighting.
And or you again, also had his thoughts going.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been real easy for that to be cheesy or to not work, but they did it so well and it really worked. And that kind of added to the experience of the film. It just felt like, wow, this is a really fresh take on a superhero film. I feel like I'm seeing something I haven't seen before. So that immediately just drew me in. And then to have the great characters on top of that, it just felt like everything was working so well together. And I loved getting to see all the different versions of Spider-Man. And again, this is such a character that everyone knows. We all love Spider-Man, but through Miles, through the Peter Parker from the alternate dimension, who's kind of world weary and washed up, we get to see the character through new eyes. So I was really impressed with all the Spider-Mans we've seen on scene, to be able to take the character and make it feel kind of exciting and new again, I thought was a real accomplishment.
At first I was confused, because I thought maybe this was going to take place in the same universe as Homecoming does in the MCU.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be in the MCU. But going in, I thought maybe, you know, that they were going to use the voices from Homecoming and all that kind of thing. Quickly I was like, you know, I was kind of like, well, I guess they're not doing that. They're going a different direction. I wonder why they're doing that. And then Peter dies and you're like, okay, that's why they're doing
it. Yeah. Like, I was not expecting
that. It's the second time I've seen Spider-Man die this year.
Yeah.
Like, is it a little too raw for you still, Mikey?
Yeah, still too soon. Too soon, man.
I don't want to go.
I'm sorry, Tony. I'm sorry.
you want to make a movie, kid? Have Spider-Man die. That'll bring him in.
It would have been great if the news story said, rumor, we have a tape of it, and it says his final words were, I don't want to go.
Yeah. Rip that wound open again.
Mm. But yeah, the techniques, the style of this movie, it's almost like you're watching, you remember, I guess some of you probably will remember back in the, like, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, maybe they tried motion comics. Mm. And they still kind of have some here and there, but they kind of were doing something like this, but it really wasn't catching on. This is like digital comics, like dialed up to 1,000.
Yes.
So, and yes, really well done. Dev, something from you that, that you pulled out of this movie.
You know what, man, my MVP has got to be Jake Johnson as Peter Parker. And I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting Jake to bring so much empathy to Peter Parker, because I thought, knowing Jake Johnson, I thought, oh, okay, so this is going to be a snarky, just kind of standoffish Peter Parker that's going to have to see, that's going to like find his heart by working with Miles and stop being a jerk. But from the moment he comes on screen and you see this Peter Parker who has been doing this for years, for decades, and how it has beaten him down and what it has taken from him, and to see that and compare it to what we were talking about earlier with the accessibility of Peter Parker, it was really heartfelt to be about Peter trying to put his life back together. And towards the end of the movie, you know, spoiler alert, you know, for him to even kind of, you know, think about, is it even worth going on? That maybe that this is the end for him. And that I thought what Jake brought to it was just so real and authentic, and it had the humor, but it also just had the pathos of this is the, we always see the superhero aspects of being the hero and the greatness of saving the day. But to him to play that aspect of the burden that it is also and what you lose, I thought was such a deep and layered thing to bring to an animated movie, and maybe something that we've only seen and maybe even the absolute best comic movie, still something we don't see enough of. So that performance and that interpretation of Peter Parker, I thought, was fantastic.
I agree with that completely. This is just as much, almost just as much, Peter B. Parker's story as it is Miles's.
Yes.
Because he's just got as much, just as much growth. And, when I was talking like a week ago, I was talking to a really good friend of mine who is a Spider-Man fan. And I'm like, you going to go see the new movie this weekend? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, really? Why not? He's like, I don't know. The ads just make Peter look like he's stupid. And so he was really rebelling against that. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went into the movie and I had seen some previews, but I don't think I'd seen as much as I try to stay away from a lot of that stuff. So going in, I'm like, well, I hope they don't make Peter out to be like an idiot. And of course, you know, first you get the Chris Pine Spider-Man, and he's amazing. Like, he literally is amazing, you know? He's amazing, spectacular, however, like, you want to put on there, right?
Hey, he even has a Christmas album.
Exactly. An awesome Christmas album.
Yes. And,
I want that album so bad.
yes.
And then you get, you know, and then you get, what does Miles call him? Janky, like Spider-Man, right? but credit to the writers and credit to them. You're right. He's not just played for like as an idiot Spider-Man. He's been crushed by everything that this job requires of you, like sacrifices after sacrifices of people dying and your love life being destroyed and you know, and all of that. And after a while, you know, I mean, how many times have we read in the comics where Peter just quits because he just can't take it anymore? And so this is a Peter that's pretty much quit. And from that perspective, I thought, you know, and yet he still is Peter. He still wants to, you know, he still cares about this kid. He still believes in this kid. And it's really, really a great story for him.
And thanks for bringing that up. Thanks for, because that part right there that you just said also really touches me just emotionally, because despite everything that he's been through, to your point, he still is Peter Parker. And when he's not, and when he's refusing to help Miles, it's not because he's a jerk. It's because he's trying to protect him.
Yes.
Miles is ready. So he's still looking out for him and trying to do the right thing. Like, there's never that moment where we're trying to pull Peter to do the right thing. No, he's going to do the right thing because at the end of the day, he's still Peter Parker. And that was so great. That's what makes him the hero, is that despite everything he's gone through, and the fact that he's paunchy now, the fact that he's not the guy he once was, he still is Peter, though, at heart. And that's what made him so effective.
Exactly.
And you get the go ahead, Mike.
No, he still has the smarts. He still has the heart of Peter. And, you know, he ran into some hard times. He became very cynical and, you know, had a different take on the world because he's been doing it so long. And, you know, he lost Mary Jane because of that. And his look on it, but he kept hoping. And when he met Miles, he saw probably a lot of his younger self in him.
Oh, yeah. And I think that was, that's there too. And, you know, all the questions he had. I mean, he tells Miles that we find out that he, you know, Mary Jane wanted to have kids. And he was like, no, I can't have kids. And now he's seeing that can be an option. I think in the beginning, when they need someone to sacrifice, he's like, it might as well be me because I've got nothing left to go back to anyway. So he's got that attitude. But by the end, you really feel like he's making the heroic sacrifice where even though he's got something to live for, he still wants to do the right thing. Still wants to save the day. And is still willing to sacrifice himself. It's really, really complex. That surprised me probably more than anything else. Yes. Except for, how funny I thought, Peter Parker was.
John Mulaney.
I've seen Peter Parker, you know, in comic form many times. I think this is the first time I've seen him, like, in animated form or, you know, outside of comics. And that was another thing where I'm like, oh, is this going to work? And yet it does. It's amazing how they're able to take the different, not just different spider people, different versions of Peter, but they're like the different styles. One's in black and white. One's in anime. One's in, like, it's just, and it still works.
100% correct. Yes.
So Mike, what's something else in the movie that you liked a lot?
Oh man, I love the power of Aunt May. She was amazing in this.
Oh, that was awesome.
You know, she should become, you know, I wish she was my aunt in this one. And it was awesome because she wasn't the frail little Aunt May we used to get in the comics, or she wasn't the Marissa Tomei we got.
Where are the wheat cakes? That's what I want to know. Like, where does she stack in the wheat cakes?
Well, the thing is, this is the Aunt May from the Ultimate Universe who, you know, was, you know, basically Peter Parker's, you know, Alfred, you know, had the Batcave ready for him and everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love the scene when they went down to the spider cave or the spider hangout or whatever they wanted to call it. And you saw all the different costumes and you saw the spider mobile and you saw the spider buggy. It was awesome. They hit on everything and it was a ton of fun, and the Stan cameo was awesome in this. And I got
It got me. I cried. I cried.
Wow.
Stan was perfect. Like, I'm sure that Stan's cameos, I'm sure his Avengers Endgame cameo has been already shot. I'm sure it's probably Captain Marvel as well. So we will still see Stan, I think, at least in the next few Marvel MCU movies. But if this was the last one, it would have been perfect.
And then when they did the dedication at the end to Steve and to Stan.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
it was just like, wow. But I loved the different Spider men and women, and I enjoyed it. Spider Gwen was awesome. I could have just watched the whole movie with her.
Right.
And, you know, I've heard rumors. Yes.
Yep. Spinoff.
But also, you know, we'll talk about that later. Because, you know, there's a sequel already in the works. There's also spinoffs in the works. So it'll be very interesting to see. Thank you for telling me, Mike Gordon, to stay all the way to the end.
It's the best. You started pointing.
No.
Back to the beginning. I'm like, he's going back to the beginning. Where's he? And I'm like, oh, he's going to the animated series. Mm-hmm. Like the beginning of Spider-Man animated. That's so the double meanings of so much of this movie is amazing. I have to watch it again just to catch them all. Because there's a lot of love towards the franchise, towards the comics, towards the movies, towards like it's all there. This is a love letter it might be about Miles, but it's a love letter to Spider-Man and Peter and everything that's come before.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, it was funny. I saw a couple people on Facebook post. I always thought the Kingpin was a Daredevil villain.
Great thing. Great point. Yes.
And it was like, no, he originally was a Spider-Man villain.
Certainly was. And used quite well here. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the bad guys. Let's talk about Kingpin as the villain. Not again, like Mike just pointed out, not one that you usually associate with Spider-Man, at least in off the printed page. Ashley, what did you think about and his rationale and everything that went into Kingpin?
Yeah, I thought they did a really great job adapting him. I was really only familiar with him from the Netflix Daredevil series. So I thought that was kind of interesting to look at that as a possible like backstory, maybe even for this character that we saw with kind of his obsession with Vanessa and trying to balance that relationship with his life of crime. And they established early on that he's not something to mess with. I hadn't realized that Spider-Man was going to die. And it's like, oh my gosh, he just like killed Spider-Man in this animated family movie. So it's like that kind of took it a little bit darker, but I thought they did a good job making him seem intimidating, but also giving him that little bit of interesting humanity. Like he wanted to get his family back, but he's obviously gone way off the deep end and he's doing terrible things. So just kind of that obsession there was really interesting. And his animation style was interesting too. I thought really larger than life with these huge intimidating shoulders, and again it's one of those things that could have easily looked silly, but I think worked well just to kind of emphasize again what a kind of a frightening presence and intimidating and intense villain this is. And I enjoyed seeing a lot of the other villains too. Like I wasn't expecting to see a version of Doc Ock, so that was pretty cool as well.
That surprised me as well. I didn't see it coming. I want to go back to your point about Kingpin, and it's interesting because they use the Kingpin from that Bill Sienkiewicz did in a I think it was a miniseries or one story arc from Spider-Man back in the let's say 90s, maybe early 2000s. And that's the look they chose to go with. Now, out of all the looks of the Kingpin that that are out there, it is a very daring choice to go with this look, because it doesn't match Miles. It doesn't match some of the other animation in the movie. But this movie's not afraid of any of that. Like this movie's like, you know what? We're just going to blend everything into this story, and it's going to work. Trust me. And it does work. It's amazing that it does, but it does.
Yeah. No, it was really well done. I liked Kingpin a lot, and Liv Schreiber was awesome as Kingpin.
Yeah, I could not pick out his voice. I mean, he did a really good job with that New York accent there.
A very thick New York accent.
Can I talk about how I'm a little conflicted with Kingpin and their portrayal of him? Because Kingpin is one of my all-time favorite villains. And I think just, I love the motivation that they gave him. I mean, come on. This whole movie is about heart. It's all about loss. And it's all about, it's just, and for him to, for the whole reason for him to have created this machine was to bring back his wife and his son. It's just gut-wrenching. Because that's what, you know, Marvel has always done so well, these characters, is giving them human motivations for things. And so I thought that was so fascinating because, and it ties right into like Netflix's version of Kingpin, who had these very human motivations for the things that he did. So I love that because then, because that's the kind of layered storytelling that I love to see in animated movies because it's what takes it to the next level. I don't know if I was on point with the animation design of him because to your point, Mike, about how it was in such a contrast to Mike, how it was such a contrast to Miles that it was almost too striking for me where it's like he almost didn't fit the world in the same way that other characters did. I felt he was intimidating. I thought the essence of the Kingpin was there. But there were times when I would look at him and I would think of Gru from Despicable Me. And I was like, I don't want to be thinking of that. So it was just, I was a little.
Now that you mentioned it, I did see Gru.
Yeah. So, and yeah, I mean, just the massive shoulders with the little legs. I was like, So I wasn't. So I don't know if I ever got used to that, despite the fact that I loved the portrayal of his motivations, and I did feel that he was intimidating and a suitable foil for Miles.
Wait. Does that mean Doc Ock, Scorpion, and Tombstone are minions in this?
If he would have used the phrase "to my minions," it wouldn't have felt out of place.
They're all Sony animated movies, right? So
yes,
true.
Yes.
Crossover.
There you go.
Yeah, I did like the fact that, you know, and I never really thought about it. It's not my first thought of Kingpin in the comics, but obviously outside the comics, they've now established that Kingpin, whether it's in the movies or on Netflix now, is his main goal or his main focus is that he's obsessed with Vanessa. And that is something that it's like, oh, that's a thing with him now. So that's what people know him as for really. Much more, of course.
But it was that way also for a while in the comic books too.
A little bit, but not like, certainly not in the beginning. Cause I can remember when, I can remember cause he's been around before, way before Vanessa. So, I definitely think that, I can see your point because there are times where there are scenes where it may not work as well, but the final battle between them.
Oh, was yes.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And it was perfect actually.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That we 100% agree on. Yes.
And whenever he struck, I mean, I'm not even going to ask you to excuse the pun. But whenever he struck, it had real serious weight to it.
Literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Literally had a serious weight to it.
Well done.
As we're getting ready to wind down a little bit, I just wanted to see if there's anything that maybe you guys weren't so crazy about. Anything about in this movie that was like, I could have done without that, or maybe that was a miscue or something that just didn't work for you as well. Mike, you got anything that comes to mind?
No, I really don't, actually. This movie hit all the right spots. And I'm going to go out and say it right now. I think this is my favorite Spider-Man movie that's made it to the big screen.
There we go.
And I'm walking away and throwing the microphone down right now.
All right. Ashley, anything that didn't work for you as well?
You know, I'm just going to have to just copy what Mike said. Like, I was thinking about
it. Don't
like,
copy him. Don't. You, don't. Sorry. He's not a role model, Ashley. No, he's really not.
He's a good guy. But I was really.
Remember who signs the paychecks around here.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, I do.
I'll have to get one in order to find that out.
Yeah.
Mm.
It says William Fate. No.
Yeah.
So another perfect score, roughly.
Yeah, I was really trying to kind of rack my brain and think of something, because usually there's always something that bothers you, but really there's not anything I would change. And I'm kind of thinking about, as much as I loved Infinity War, it was my favorite movie of the year up until this point, I think I may have liked Into the Spider-Verse even more. So was not expecting that, but just really, and walked out of the theater with a smile on my face and ended up really loving this one.
Dev, was Kingpin the weak point for you, or was there anything else that sort of bugged you?
No, it wasn't just Kingpin. There is an issue that I have, though, and I hate to be that guy.
No.
That the thing that sticks out to me a little bit, and it's why I can't say it's my favorite Spider-Man movie, is because I feel that the other characters in this movie have too many moments where they kind of outshine Miles for me. I feel like there are moments where Jake Johnson's Peter Parker tugged at my heartstrings more, where I thought Nick Cage as Spider-Man Noir was funnier, where I thought Spider-Gwen was just as interesting with her storyline. So there were moments when I felt that Miles kind of got overshadowed by the people around him. And it could be, and I get that it's because this is his first time. This is the movie where he finds himself. So he's growing into his own. And in the next movie, when he has the floor to himself, that'll be corrected. But it's like, but when I watch Homecoming, I never lose Tom Holland as Peter Parker, despite all the characters around him, Michael Keaton, the kid playing Ned, despite all these great performances around him, I never lose who my focus is. And there are times in this movie where I did lose Miles because the cast around him was just so good. But that's a pet peeve. But it was something that I noticed, and I didn't want that. Considering this was Miles Morales' first moment on the big screen, I really wanted him to have full control over everything.
That's very fair. I think we talk about we've talked a lot about how in the recent years you can't just have like a solo hero story. There's not always got to be like Team Arrow or Team. Mm. You know, a group effort. And certainly that's true here. And sometimes I think there were times where I did question. I mean, it's cool to see some of the other characters, but really they show up and they, I don't know, like for me, I like the character a lot, but I feel like we should have had a little bit less Spider-Man noir. Like, every other thing that he said didn't work for me. Like I thought either he's an intense guy or he's a joke. And there were times where he crossed the line a little bit to me into more humorous stuff. And I'm like, no, you've got the pig for that. Like you don't need him to be like, you know, obsessing over Rubik's cubes. Like he could be this really just pit of whatever. And it still would work because it's allowed, right?
He could be the Batman of the thing.
Yeah, kind of, right? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was the only thing. But I mean, poof, we're talking about like nitpicks, really. I mean,
exactly.
I can't wait to see this again. I've seen a couple movies this year twice, but this one, like, I'm like really itching. There's so much of it. And it goes by so fast. I'd be curious on a second watch through whether it goes by like that fast or whether there's any part that kind of drags. And it doesn't feel like there would be, but I don't know. I'd have to, see it again to try to find that out. But, well, very cool. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up. So just, I guess everybody can give it a rating. Usually we do 1 to 5 here. So, and then final thoughts on the movie. And we'll start with you, Ashley.
All right. Well, I try to be pretty careful about how often I give out fives. I think the only other one I gave out this year was for Infinity War, but I'm going to have to give it a 5. I just really love it. It exceeded my expectations, surprised me, felt fresh, something like I'd never seen before. And cannot wait to see it again. Definitely highly recommend.
Awesome. Awesome. Dev?
I'm going to go 4 out of 5. It's amazing that we live in a world where we can get Miles Morales on the big screen in a heartfelt story that truly gives him a character and gives him a backstory and truly sets him up as a superhero in the superhero canon to be followed and to be loved on the same level as everyone else that we now have, on the same level as Captain America or anybody else that we know and love. So that is fantastic. Cause it wasn't too long ago that, you know, to think that that character being represented on the big screen was impossible, and to actually have it in a film of this quality is amazing. And to my point earlier, it's not just Miles. There's all the characters in this film really have a lot to shine through, and particularly the classic Peter Parker as well. So that dynamic on screen is phenomenal to watch. So 4 out of 5, almost perfect for me.
Yeah. Mike?
I'm going to have to agree with Ashley on this one. You know, I really enjoyed this one. I usually don't give out fives, but I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to give this one a 5. I was in tears the whole scene where Miles was dragging Peter's body while they on the off the subway car. And that was hilarious. And then the police were saying, "We're chasing this kid dressed in a Spider-Man costume, dragging a body with him." Poor Peter's body, you know.
Dead hobo or something like that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. A dead hobo. And it was just awesome. And, you know, poor Peter's body being dragged like face first across the ground and everything. And it's just like, oh, that was just, it was just classic. And yeah. There were so many scenes in this. I want to see this movie again to see what I missed the first time, you know, literally, because I know there is a ton.
Because Into the Spider-Verse gives you different versions of Peter and Spider-Man, period. You get an origin story because Miles doesn't really become Spider-Man until the last act. And you get, you know, experience, spider characters as well, so you get your cake and eat it too, so to speak. And I have to give this I'm gonna give it a 4.5. I'm gonna choose because and it could increase because with viewings, that's for sure. But I mean, it's solid enough that it's amazing, and it sort of you know, I feel somewhat justified in my own personal view, because I've always thought that Edgar Wright could make a kick-ass Spider-Man movie. If they just let him go. After I saw Scott Pilgrim, I said, that's the guy I want to direct the Spider-Man franchise now. If Sam is giving it up, because I think at the time Sam Raimi was still doing it, I said, if Sam gives it up, I don't want James Cameron. I don't want this guy. I don't want that guy. I want Edgar Wright. I want it to be insane. And...
wow.
This to me is that kind of energy. Certainly it's a lot different than, you know, Edgar would have done it, but I think a lot of the elements are there. And and Spider-Man is exactly the kind of character that is at home in this kind of environment. And I'm glad to see it finally reaching its potential. I feel sorry for Tom Holland in the next Homecoming, like the sequel to Homecoming, because now he's got to live up to this movie.
Yeah.
The gauntlet has been thrown by Sony. Wow.
Yeah, maybe. Wow. He might be like, you know, guys, maybe I should just stay dusted. Cause I don't want to compete with this, cause this is amazing. So.
But that's a great point, Mike. That's such a great point. That's what we look forward to. It's like now that Sony has kind of punched Marvel in the mouth a little bit with his own character, now how is Marvel going to respond? And that's what we want to see. So, yay.
I could just snap my fingers and find out, you know?
if they hadn't already made it, I would have been like, this is going to be a big, you know, see if it's influenced by it. But I think they've already done most of the filming on this, so... I think we're expecting it pretty soon. So.
Well, also remember, real quickly, is these are the same people who also brought you Lego Batman.
Yeah.
And that was awesome.
100%.
And so they knew
how to get it.
They do get it. they get the characters, they get, you know, all the inside jokes and everything. And they brought heart to this one and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And you know what, Mikey, I think we're gonna have to say that's all, folks.
Cool. Can we legally say that?
Okay. Let's take a quick break and we will find out in a moment.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can, spins a web any size, catches thieves just like guys. Look out.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you can do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network, Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, This Geek Girl is talking about some of my favorite recent board games that have came out in 2018. So I know I've done other lists of some of my favorite games in the past, but there were a lot of really great new games that came out this year, so I figured I would at least talk about three of them in this episode. So I'm going to start off with Root. This is an asymmetrical board game that can play up to 4 players in the base game or 6 with the expansion. And with the expansion, you can also play solo as well. You play forest creatures in a campaign to fully control the forest. There is also one character in it that has different goals, and they're not trying to take over the forest. They're trying to finish different tasks to get victory points to win. So it has a lot of different stuff going on that gives the game a lot of replay value. Especially since if you're playing the different characters, you're learning a different thing each time. Now, next up, I'm going to talk about Talisman Legendary Tales. Now, this is a Talisman board game, but it is way different than the Talisman game we all know. This is a cooperative game where all the characters are trying to help each other finish different goals. There are different quests and levels to compete, and you all work together to finish them. As you do more, they get harder and more challenging. This game also it's a great game for people who love working together in board games, since strategy games or stuff like that aren't always everyone's cup of tea. And it's a quick learn, but it's still very challenging as you go along in the game. It starts easy and it gets harder. Now, the next one isn't really a board game, it's a card game, Keyforge. And if you're not a fan of deck building games, then you will probably like this one because you buy each deck, you don't build your decks because each deck is unique to itself. Now, I'm still on the wall about this one because you can get a really, really crappy deck or a really good one, and it really, really makes the game a little frustrating if you keep pulling not good decks. But if you get one that's kind of in the middle and you play with your friends and you win some games and you lose some games and you really learn how to play it, then the game is fun. But they've also, if you're going to play in, like, competitions and stuff, they've worked it out where the really, really good decks will not always win. But yeah, so I mean, if that's your type of thing and you like card games and you like stuff where you don't have to just keep buying booster packs, you can buy different decks and you don't have to do anything to them, then you should totally check out Keyforge. I'm still on the wall about it, but I have enjoyed it the few times I've gotten to play it. So I need to play it a little bit more to fully make a decision. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
For the week of December 17th, it's the ESO Network Con Report.
Howdy, everyone. And I am somewhat pleased, I guess, to say that the 2018 con season has come to an end. Mike and I went to the one-day Atlanta Comic Con last weekend, had a great time, but that is the last event that is on the ESO Network schedule. So we are all con-free for the rest of the year, which is only a couple weeks, but we're going to rest up and start getting your calendars ready for 2019, because it's right around the corner. And there's three events that are going to hit you right in the face. January 18th through the 21st is Aresia. It's a convention in Boston, Massachusetts. It's a science fiction fantasy convention. Lots of different stuff. And speaking of different stuff, Kevin from the Flopcast is going to be there. He's going to be participating in panels. He doesn't have an exact schedule yet, so when we get that, we'll let you know. But yes, you can be prepared to usher in some representatives from Chicken Town at Aresia, January 18th through the 21st. And then the following weekend, January 19th through the 27th, in Chattanooga is Chattacon. And Corey from the Vitamin Geeks will be attending that show. He'll be also on a few panels as well. It's going to be a great time. And Chattanooga is a great city, and Chattacon is a great convention from everything that I hear. So we hope to have Corey back on to report about his experience there. So that should be a good time. And then in February 15th through the 17th is Inuhele. It is a tiki weekend in Atlanta, Georgia. And I don't think it'll be any surprise to anybody listening here who's familiar with myself, but I will be there representing Tiki Zombie. I'll be there with artist Peter Cutler. We will have a table there, and it's going to be a great time to usher in this new tiki tour of Atlanta. So those are the only three that we've got on the slate now, but there's a lot of things in the works. So if you have a convention that you want us to help participate in, or you want us to promote, please reach out to us, because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Dav, you made it through your first episode, my friend.
Yay, I did it. Woo!
Oh, well, you're not leaving. You're still stuck in the geek
seat. Oh,
there.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, the geek, literally the geek seat stays with you for the rest of your life. Don't ever worry about that.
Oh, thank you so much, my friend.
That's how we got Ashley involved, you know?
Yeah. It's fine. It's all fine.
Dav, anything you want to promote or shout out about?
Well, no, I just want to shout out to people just to always as to visit your local comic stores, support indie comic books being sold. Nothing for myself at the current time. Theater gigs are coming up in the near future, but hey, that's nothing to talk about here.
No, we kind of hinted at some of that in the Geek Seat segment anyway, so shh.
Oh.
Ashley, thank you so much, my dear.
Oh, thank you. I always love talking movies with you guys, and especially this one. I was really looking forward to seeing what everybody thought of this movie.
And by the way, great job you and Mike did on your episode with talking about the Big Lebowski.
Oh, thank you. And I actually wanted to do that as my shout out tonight as a thank you to Mike Gordon. I just had a blast recording those special Patreon episodes, talking a little bit more about the movies I watched for the Better Late Than Never blog series. It was really great to kind of expand my cinematic horizons a little bit, as it were, and then just to get to dive even deeper with them. So really enjoyed doing that. So wanted to thank you for giving me the chance to do those.
Absolutely. And hopefully we'll be able to do some more.
Yes, I'm cooking up some plans for next year. So I think Better Late Than Never is not done yet.
Nope. Awesome. You have about 60 years of movie history to go through.
Yeah, so just keep doing it forever.
So I think you'll have plenty to choose from there.
Yes, indeed.
And Mr. Mike, thank you as always, my friend.
And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I got to give a shout out to the network. We had a good turnout for the, and you're probably going to join me in this shout out, I'm sure. But we had a good turnout over the weekend for our holiday get together. And it gets, man, is it just me or does it get bigger and bigger every year?
It does get bigger because the family grows bigger, as we like to call it. And it was just a ton of fun.
And it really does feel like a family. Like, it was really perfect to have it at an Italian restaurant because it really had that family feel to it.
I almost felt like the Kingpin should have been hosting it or something, you know?
But it was just great to see everybody come out. Some people that we hadn't seen for a while that are you know, friends of the station, and it's just a good time. And yeah, I mean, we do like to hang out with each other, so that's pretty cool. I mean, the fact that you know, we don't just podcast, we actually like to hang out. So you know, we're talking about doing sort of more of these events, not just for, you know, the final holiday of the year, but that would be good too.
No, exactly. And, you know, we'll try to do more and more, you know, ESO outings, getting everybody together and, you know, involving more and more listeners at home. And that's the great thing about it.
They really are a great bunch of folks. And if people are listening to this show, do yourself a favor and dial up some of the other shows on the network, and even one that you just don't know anything about. Just go ahead, download an episode, play it. And you'll probably be surprised at how much you just like it, because the personalities of these people come through.
Well, exactly. And that's part of the fun about it. And, you know, it definitely is. I think I see in the future an ESO bowling tournament. That could be a lot of fun.
Ooh. Ooh. Wow.
It just went up a notch, folks.
Exactly. I know, right? I think the gauntlet has been thrown. So I think I see this coming in the future. Look for it in early 2019.
Wow.
All right. my shout out real quick on top of, you know, thanking everybody for joining us this last weekend. I've been seeing another podcast again, and I joined Gerald Glassford over on the PCC, which is the Pop Culture Cosmos. And him and I chatted about my top five favorite pop culture, you know, events of 2018. And it was a ton of fun, some good, some not so positive, but, you know, it affected the geek community and the pop area. So it was a lot of fun, and it was always great. Listen to Gerald and his crew over at Pop Culture Cosmos, and they can be found as part of the ESO network. So you definitely can be glad to find that out. And, you know, if you ever want Mike or I to join you on a podcast, Ashley even goes on to other podcasts every once in a while. She's been seeing other folks.
God. Of course not. Of course not.
Please, you know, definitely reach out to us. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. You know, we're open to talking. We'd like to talk. We're somewhat knowledgeable. And of course, you could write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. So we got a lot of different changes coming in 2019, some sooner than later, and you guys at home will be all part of it. But the big announcement is, ready for this, folks, you can now find Earth Station 1 on Spotify. That's right, folks. We have glad to announce that we are now on Spotify. Both Earth Station 1 and Earth Station Who is now part of Spotify. And just add that to the list of the many places you could already find us. So,
yay, people, you know, under 40 will listen to us.
Exactly. See? Thank you, Mike.
You know, there's no shame. There's no shame in that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Ashley could have, you know, attested for that. You know, she's 14, so it's cool.
Hey, a few years older than that.
It was a compliment, my dear. Ooh, it's a compliment. So we definitely, you know, definitely want you guys to listen, tell your friends, tell your neighbors. And, you know, the biggest gift you can give us, truthfully, is, you know, leave us feedback on any of the players you listen to us. You know, we're up on iTunes. We're up on Stitcher. We're up on Spotify now. We're up on Google. We're up on Android and all these other media players, you know, that feed off of that. You can now find Earth Station 1 up there. And, you know, definitely give us a listen and, you know, tell your friends and tell your neighbors. The more you tell people about us, the more listeners we get. And, you know, we definitely appreciate everyone for everything that you guys do. And Christmas is just right around the corner. And you know what? It's that time of year. And, you know, I just wish good thoughts for everybody. And speaking of good thoughts, we are once again going to the movies next week. That's right, folks. We are going to be looking at Aquaman. And, you know, some people might be looking at him more closely than others, but
I can dig it.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, so we are going to go take a dive with Aquaman next week. So it should be a lot of fun. You know, until then, My name is Mike Faber. It has been my pleasure to talk to each and every one of you, and we will see you next week here on the Air Station One podcast. Peace, and we are done. Ta-da.
Yay.
Spotty bells, spotty bells, whipping all the time. Oh, what fun to swing around New York while fighting crime. Swinging through the streets, a web of spider silk. Kicking all the butts of villains and their ilk. Bombs from goblins fling, fling, pumpkins blooming bright, bright. Hard it is to consistently bring peace to New York all night. Oh, spidey bells might be swell to do more than fight crime. I got a lot of qualities that don't get much at time. I can sing, I can dance, I tell jokes, I act. I get big deal praise, you call me back.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.